You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Are you a film fan who loves the ultimate home video experience? Look no further than The Disconnected. Your host, Ryan Verrill, is your go-to source for the latest and most accurate information on home video releases, exclusive interviews with industry insiders and filmmakers, and has established a thriving community where every film and physical media enthusiast feels welcome. From hidden gems to blockbuster hits, The Disconnected brings you insider knowledge and a welcoming space to share your love of cinema. Watch every Thursday night at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific for the live announcements show and follow The Disconnected on social media to stay updated. Subscribe to The Disconnected on YouTube or on the podcast provider of your choice and dive into a world where every movie night is an adventure.
Ha 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 August. Ha 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 bra ha ha bra ha ha bra ha ha bra ha ha August. August. Bra-bra-bra-August? No ha ha August. Hit the wavest. Hit the beachest. Ha ha August. It's the coolest. Music. It's the dumbest.
Welcome to the New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I know we're not at final questions, but is it safe for me to say at work, a stick was made to be rode?
And Erica.
I know we're not at final questions, but are you ready for a righteous story? I'm talking 103 minutes with titles.
And we are in the midst of Ha-Ha-August 2, Double Take, where we talk about all the comedy movies released by New World Pictures. But joining us, we have a very special returning guest. Our good friend and New World superfan, Justin Grahams, is on the show.
Woo! Hello, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Woo! I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
I know you have.
3 years with titles.
Well, it is great to have you back, Justin, and I know that this is a movie that you love very, very much, and I'm going to ask you about it in just a second, but I'm going to let everyone else know that we are talking about 1988's Under the Boardwalk.
It's the last weekend of their last summer.
Gentlemen, take a bath.
They can part friends.
It's not going to be the same without you around here, bro.
They can part enemies.
You guys think you can just cross the line like that?
Or they can stay together forever.
Which way are you going?
Which way are you going?
Under the Boardwalk, rated R.
That's right, 1988's Under the Boardwalk, brought to you by Jail Chef. Providing nutritious meals to all temporary residents of the Santa Monica penal system. Don't be afraid to chow down. You'll need the energy to call your lawyer or bail bondsman, so take advantage of a full milk, fruit, and your choice of meatloaf or meatloaf. Being jailed can be terrible, but not quite as terrible with Jail Chef. Now, before we get into all the information about this movie, Justin, I know this is a movie that is very special to you, and a lot of the New World movies are very special to you, but this one is particular significance. Can you tell us why this has been such, you've been waiting so long to talk about Under the Boardwalk?
Of course. Well, one, it's one of the best New World films ever released, in my opinion. But two, I saw the sneak preview of this film where they even handed out audience cards for feedback. After seeing Shoot to Kill with Tom Berenger, they tacked on Under the Boardwalk in a sneak preview, San Jose, 1988. And I was part of that screening and part of that audience participation.
Now, how into New World were you at that point in time?
Peak. This was peak New World, peak interest. This was right before they collapsed in 88, 89. So I was fully dialed into New World, you know, collecting the VHSs, collecting all the media, the ads, the posters, the soundtracks of everything. So I was peak New World at that time.
Such as this soundtrack, this vinyl That's record it. Of the Under the Boardwalk soundtrack.
I still have it.
What was this the first Under the New World movie that you saw in a movie theater? Or
oh no, no, it was not. But it was one of the last.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Do you recall what the first one was?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I know we're not at final questions, but dang. No,
I know. I just know. I want to say it was probably Avenging Angel.
Oh, okay. Oh,
wow. Wow.
I'm pretty sure it was that.
Wow. You were probably pretty young.
Yeah, 10. Talk to my parents.
But already well-versed in the Angel lore, was it upsetting to you that it wasn't the same actress?
I actually was really upset about that when the posters came out. It felt completely ripped off. But Betsy Russell ended up doing a good job.
It's true.
It didn't prevent you from going, though. You were like, all right. Now, oh, yeah, I mean, now Angel's got to really prove what she's made of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was all in.
Well, this one is made by or directed by Fritz Kirsch, who for his, what was that sound? Is everybody okay?
I think that was a motorcycle taking okay. off.
Okay, all right. It was either a motorcycle or somebody's stomach just going erupting from hunger pains.
Okay, so much gotcha. Meatloaf. I've had so much meatloaf lately.
My God. I had a full milk, a prison milk, and you know how filling those are.
Those really fill the belly.
It just coats the throat. I love to have it before a recording. Just really gets me ready.
Prison milk.
Let's run out of talk.
Jail milk. Jail milk. Prison milk is a lot different.
Yeah.
Prison. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on. We've covered this in other episodes, people.
This one was directed by Fritz Kirsch, his third movie for New World Pictures following Tough Turf and Children of the Corn. Though Kirsch on this one was a hired gun by the studio, replacing the original director. The original director actually being actor Ian Seberg, who had made a short film that got the attention of New World. Apparently, it was about a pirate ship and crew, according to Matthew Ermus, who came up with the story for Under the Boardwalk. He actually told me over email, he said, I saw an article about some local beach kids and valley kids fighting for waves in Santa Monica. It was ripe for a West Side Story reworking. I hired a then unknown Robert King to work out the story with me for a script. I was working at Kings Road Entertainment with Robert's girlfriend and future wife, Michelle. Once we got the story down, I hired Robert to write the script. Once it was ready, I sent it out to David Saunders, who then got it to New World. So that's how this movie comes about. And it is written by Robert King, who does go on to create The Good Wife with his wife and continue to write for a lot of TV shows and now directing TV shows such as Elsbeth and others. But back then, he was writing a lot of genre movies, a lot of for Corman, actually, including The Nest, Blood Fist, and Silk 2. For Concord, and then also wrote Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge, for Freeze Entertainment, who also...
I've seen it.
Who also coincidentally produced Thrashin', which is the skateboard dry run of this movie, basically.
Yeah. That's really interesting. To quickly interrupt and sidetrack and derail everything that you're saying that's important and true, when you said... that the original director was actor Ian Seberg. Ian Seberg. I was like, oh, do you mean the guy that was in Beverly Hills 90210? Because I was thinking that it was Ian Ziering. So for a minute, I was
That is Ian. That's Ian.
So I was way off.
Ian is the other guy that they did hire initially. Mm. In fact, he actually works for a week shooting this film before... They decided they weren't happy with the results, and they took a 2-week break and brought Fritz in to finish off the movie. But as Fritz Kirsch told us in an interview that's going to air next week, We're going to talk to Fritz Kirsch next week. He said that, quote, he wanted to make a film about class distinction and about, you know, the commercialization of something really cool like athletics and how it's just turning people. So I think the movie, as it was already, was just sort of about beach culture, and he wanted to kind of give it a little bit more. He did work, he tells us, with Robert King on the script, and Robert King worked throughout the production on the script, so they were able to put together a movie that I hopefully Fritz is very happy with, and you'll listen and find out. But this stars biggest star of the movie, Keith Coogan, who had already appeared in Adventures in Babysitting and Hiding Out, and had four movies opening in 1989.
Dang.
This, Cousins, the Disney Channel movie Spooner, and Cheetah, which Coogan shot right after this. In fact, it's Cheetah that explains the film's poster, which Coogan actually explained to me via Twitter. He said, I was in Africa shooting Cheetah, so they put me up against the catering truck and took that photo and then comped it in. And that's why his head is so much larger than everyone else's and looks like he was not there at all during that photo shoot, because he also wasn't. He wasn't there. He was in Africa shooting Cheetah. As for Coogan's character in this, he described himself as a registered twit in June of 1988. He said, quote, there's no other way I can describe him. He's very bright-eyed, very naive, very innocent, very earnest. Here he is in Los Angeles having a fling before enlisting in the Navy, and he's like a fish out of water.
Yeah.
Here's where you can watch Under the Boardwalk. It's on Plex. It is on Tubi.
Tubi.
You can go ahead and get the VHS like we did, but there's also a DVD. It's out of print, but you can find it if you want to buy the DVD. Sometimes it also will have Tough Turf on it as well.
Oh.
And isn't that what you have?
It is.
Justin?
Yes, I have the VHS and the DVD with Tough Turf.
But now it's time to talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is Under the Boardwalk about?
It's about those times when, you know, you're in the middle of doing something, and it can be like really anything. Like you're waiting in line at Trader Joe's, or you're like watching a ball game, and someone starts telling you a story and they just won't shut the fuck up. And, you know, before you know it, it's 103 minutes later, your coffee bean blast ice cream is totally melted, and you've missed your oldest child's graduation ceremony. But, you know, you heard a good story.
That's right. Sometimes it takes sacrifice.
I was on board with you until you called it a ball game. Gramps, how many ball games have you attended? Oh, it's America's pastime. Dear Lord, you started off so cool and hip at Trader Joe's, then you immediately went to a ball game. I hope you got senior citizen parking. That's all I can say. Yeah. My God.
Erica, what is Under the Boardwalk about?
Under the Boardwalk finally tells the truth. Locals are assholes. They're always glorified in every other surfer movie. They're trying to kick out people from other towns. But someone finally told the truth. Locals are jerks.
Yeah.
Justin, what is Under the Boardwalk about?
I mean, to me, I think it's about whether, you know, it's one man's dilemma, whether he wants to go to a 4-year university or just crush beers in a surf shop the rest of his life. And I think in the end, the right answer is crush beers in a surf shop the rest of his life.
It's funny. I did think this movie also, I thought this movie was about how to live life, but I think it's how to live life is to, like, you know, open your arms and yell into the ocean. Hang out with a carousel horse that you have stolen. Take fresh new clothes that are in the public bathroom at the beach, and to sit on top of people's cars and occasionally sing songs to people that take part in surf competitions.
Go where the wind takes you, man.
That's how you live life. That's how you live it. That's how you embrace the fullness of life.
Yeah, man.
The clothes make the man.
That's right.
But
you don't know that he stole that horse. Come on.
What do you think? The other way to do it, washed up.
Yeah.
I wanted to live in a world where it didn't wash up from the ocean.
It's on LA Beach, baby. It could have absolutely washed up.
Backwash.
Well, it's not 20 years later, so there's not tons of stuff in the ocean. that's in the purplish hue of the future. But yeah. this is the Letterboxd synopsis. This is how Letterboxd talks about Under the Boardwalk. We are on Letterboxd, so give us a follow if you'd like. It is the final weekend of summer, and a group of Californian teenagers are looking forward to an upcoming surf contest. I mean, they're taking part in it. I mean, they're not, that sort of makes it sound like they're just thinking of that contest, but they're actually participating in it.
Yeah.
Rival gangs, the Vals and the Lokes, are confident that they will take home the trophy. But things become complicated when Reef Yorpin,
an
amazing name, an amazing name for any character anywhere, leader of the Lokes. By the way, Letterboxd has spelled Lokes two different ways. One originally was L-O-W-K-S, Lokes. Now it's L-A-W-K-S, which really says to me, Laux.
damn autocorrect.
Discovers his sister Allie has fallen in love with Val surfer Nick after meeting at a beach party.
Don't you feel like, I know we're not at final questions, but don't you feel like Reef's legal name is Frederico Yorpin and everyone calls him
for
Reef?
For sure.
I think
it's actually probably something, it's probably like William Yorpin or something like that, but I think Frederico is like, that actually sounds somewhat like Reef.
Because imagine he's like a little kid and they're like, what's your name? He's like, Frederico. And they're like, oh, we'll call him Reef. Look at him. He's so cute. What a little lock.
It's also like super.
A little lauk. He's lauk. He's laukal to the area. He's laukal. He's not from out of town. He's a laukal. I'm sorry. I work at Letterboxd. So I said laukal.
Also.
How fucking fancy are they at Letterboxd?
My God.
Excuse me. Letterboxd.
Letterboxd.
Letterboxd. Oh my God, I know we're not in final questions, but how badly do I want to open a bar, restaurant, dance club that's called Ocean Floor? Dear God. The neon already exists.
I know, it's out
so
there.
So jealous.
It's out there.
Get that mechanical surfboard.
Ah, looks so fun.
I took a beat and went, I could probably do that. Knowing full well, there's no way I could. There's no way. But there was a part of me that was like, I could do that.
Yeah. I do not have the spinal strength and flexibility for that, but my God, for a moment, for a brief, beautiful moment, me, Reefrica, I thought I could do it.
Erica, you can do the next best thing. You can dress like him.
You're right. No. You're right.
It is going to require going topless a lot.
Hey, man, I'm okay with that. I'm allowed.
That's the reason I listen to this podcast.
You listen to it for all the nudity.
All the audio nudity.
All
that
the
happens.
Audio nudity. Audio wink. Audio nude.
But we started this movie in 2008, 20 years in the future, where two surfers are waiting between sets. An epically long break in a set, I should say. It's pretty glassy out there, which says the surf report that day. and one of them mentions a legendary surfer, Nick Rainwood. And so we go back 20 years ago to him working in a surf shop. And he's played by Richard Joseph Paul, who had only been in a small role in Revenge of the Nerds 2 before this. And I believe he replaced the original actor who was cast as Nick. Once Fritz takes over.
Was it Ian Ziering?
I mean.
Was he the original actor?
Fingers crossed.
Nick?
Fingers crossed.
God, I hope so.
But then he talks to the owner of the shop. They're good friends. And he has a conversation with him that you may not realize is actually extremely important for this movie.
You think I can do it?
Do what, man?
Take the compo this year. Get enough money to stay and surf. Maybe draw a sponsorship.
What about school?
You just told me to forget about school.
I don't know. Compos are bad news. Board banging is not about the money. It's not about the women. It's not about the fighting. It's the moment, man. That's what it's about.
The moment?
Well,
Last lesson. There's a time, man. A moment. Maybe it's just a split second. Maybe it's an hour. But it's just you and the wave, man. It's just you and the wave. It's like that. And there's nothing else. That's what it's about. It's not about the shit. It's not about the money. It's just the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, you may not realize it. We're only 5 minutes into the movie, and this seems like an innocuous moment, but this is really basically the entire arc that Nick's character takes. It's all summarized right here in this scene.
Yeah.
And you will probably forget about it because Midas doesn't come back to like the end of
Meowdus.
The movie. Meowdus. Yes.
Meowdus.
Nobody beats Midas.
Meowdus. Meowdus. But I think he missed an opportunity to share a much more compelling story, a real life lesson. And he could have talked about the time that he spent as a police officer in Haddonfield, Illinois, and, you know, how to deal with the night that he came home. I mean, I feel like that could have been an even more compelling story that could have really turned his life around in a different way.
He could have also talked about spending a night in a hotel with a video camera poised on him for a student's college project, like he did in Talking Walls. So, and he also, this is Hunter Van Leer, who's playing the character, and he was in New World's Talking Walls. He was also in Halloween 2, most notably, one of Mark and I's favorite movies growing up, and I imagine Justin's as well.
Flick it.
Flick the block.
Flick it, I guess. I don't know what we're referring to, but flick it. I want to fit in. Flick it. Flouk it.
Flouk Erica it. Has not seen Halloween 2 quite as many times.
I've seen it. I mean, I've seen it.
You've seen it. You've I haven't seen it. But you haven't seen it as many times.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
But what have you seen? Have you seen just the theatrical, or have you seen it with all the extra stuff that they put on television?
I think you know I've definitely only seen the theatrical.
Well, the night is young, Erica.
Oh god, right. The night is old. For me, the night is always old.
The night is young, but we are old. That's the tricky part. So then we meet the Yorpins. Allie, the young artist, still in high school, maybe, played by Danielle von Zernick, who had a big role in La Bamba prior to this, mm-hmm. which I watched a lot back in the day because we had someone recorded it for us off of HBO. And boy, did I watch it a bunch.
Wow.
And so I thought she was a huge star. Turns out she's only done a few movies, which is a bummer. She's great in this, too.
If my math pencils out, she was 26 when she did this movie.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Yeah. Well, Reef was a cool 29.
He was, I was about to say, younger than her brother, Reef. Who is a total douche, and he's played by Steve Monarch, who actually will go on from this to take over as one of the leads in the third season and the final season of the Friday the 13th TV series.
Mm. Wow. No kidding.
Yeah.
Have you watched that season
I have
yet,
not.
Ryan?
I'm still on season one, but making my way through the entire show.
You'll be about 150 by the time you get to the end of it. Being on season one the past 35 years.
Spoiler that I didn't realize, but the guy who played the other lead, he at one point in the end of the second season, he gets turned into like a child. And that's how he's written off the show.
Wow.
Dude, half the listeners are going to tune out after that, dude. Everyone waiting to hear about how the season ended.
I'm so mad. Unsubscribe. So I don't mad. Like this. Spoiler. Don't tell me how a 30-year-old show ends. Then there's poor sweet cousin Andy out to visit the family before he joins the Navy, and whom everyone ignores for most of the movie, even Allie eventually, but certainly by Mrs. Yorpin. This is your brother's sister's kid, and mm-hmm. you are uninvolved in their visit to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. You come in and you're like, hey, take care of this kid. I'm out. Yeah. See ya.
I loved her.
She's great.
I think I found a new
role model.
a new role model. It used to be Swamp Hag, but now I think it's, you know, I think it's Santa Monica Mom. This hands off Santa Monica Mom, you know?
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Except for you're the Valley version.
Oh, you're right.
She goes out on a date and is gone for days.
That's what I mean. Her self-care is off the charts. Days-long dates? I'm doing everything wrong.
That could be awesome. It also could be a complete nightmare, because if you're not into it, like, 12 hours in, like, you have a long way to go still. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
I'm gonna say they got a bunch of mushrooms and went to Joshua Tree for the weekend. That's what I'm thinking.
I think they went to a winery, probably like a one that's not too far. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So,
like, just went to Marietta. Exactly.
And yeah, she's a look, so she probably just went to Laguna Beach. How far did she go? You know.
Exactly.
All those wineries in Laguna Beach.
Infamous for their coastal wine.
I don't know. She probably just went to Carlsbad and called it a day. Called it a couple days, I guess.
Another great place for wine. Justin, where do you think she went?
I think she later appears watching the surf compo, doesn't she?
She does, but she does, days but later. That's
days later.
Shit, bro. Called it a compo. What a loke.
Well, she didn't go too far because she got back in time for the compo.
Yeah, it's true. This is also one of the only times I've ever heard of any competition being called a compo. But
I'm going to call all competitions compos from now on. I mean, I'm 100%
calling them all compos
starting today.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Nick is cruising around town with his buddies, the Vals. Marone, Nick's buddy with the curly hair, is played by Brett Marks, who also appeared as basically the same character in Thrashin', which I just found very funny.
I don't want to step out of line, but he was the same character in Thrashin'.
He was basically the exact same.
Got him.
I would say he's like slightly dimmer. Like in this one, he's still like kind of an accomplished surfer, whereas like he can barely get anything done in Thrashin'. Anyway, Reef's crew, the Lokes, show up at his house with a disappointing amount of weed. His pal Backwash is played by CSI and Larry Sanders actor Wallace Langham, appearing here as Wally Ward, a name he used early on in his career when he appeared in New World projects like Combat Academy and The Chocolate War.
That sounds fun. Sounds like a delicious, tasty war. Yum.
Erica wants to sign up.
Yeah,
she's... I mean, where do I sign?
Yeah, we will talk about both of those movies at
some point.
I could
probably be like a... They still hire those for wars?
No. Sorry.
Like a flautist? Yeah, a flautist?
Like a fife player for wars?
A fifist?
Like I could be in the front of the war like...
A flifist?
I'm imagining it's a chocolate flute, right? I mean, it's a chocolate war.
Obviously.
Well, now I can't unhear it.
Right. You have a very short window to play.
I'm done. I'm like...
Destroy the evidence.
There's a lot of slang used in this movie. Some of it is real. Some, I think, is made up by Robert King and Fritz Kirsch. How much of it have you utilized in your daily life, Justin?
Since 1989, daily.
Just all of the slang? So let's get into it, because Andy attempts to learn some of the slang when Allie translates for him, and they're listening to Reef and his pals through their Jack and Jill bathroom.
Can you understand them?
Well, the animals are restless.
Side, you know, I take the wave really fine, right? Yeah. This guy comes after me with a skeg. No. So I roused him fully, right? He ends up in the E-room, man, selling Buicks off the lab, bro.
Okay, this guy went after him with a knife, but he beat him up, and the guy ended up in the emergency room with dry heaves.
Reef, bro.
What? I'm so fully amped.
Really excited.
Fully amped is in the water. Reef, let's book with a bud.
Leave quickly.
Chill out, Backwash. You pumping to get rousted by knobs, huh?
Relax. Do you want to get hassled by
knobs?
I've heard of some of them. I didn't know selling cars off the lot means dry heaves. I didn't. It's
Also, Skeg is the fin of a surfboard, not a knife.
Save it for the Semanticast. All right? You fucking knob. All right?
So, I know Justin embraced all the slang in this movie. Right, Justin?
Yes, I did.
Mark, did you have a hard time listening to all this slang?
I felt that the Semanticast is about to take a real big turn. And it's going to be Semantic Slang Cast now. And we're going to mix the two together and try to, you know, better define, like, what's a slang and what's semantically correct. So
that's Skag Talk. Skag Talk, dude.
That's the name of the episode. Thank you.
Skag Talk.
There was always this heavily amped out party on the beach night before the compo. Full of righteous dudes, knockout babes, bona fide board busters.
When they get to the beach, we get a sense of the different groups that inhabit it. And I feel like this is Fritz Kirsch's contribution. Maybe I'm wrong. Or maybe this is the beach culture part. I don't know. Yeah, but
this is probably Ian Ziering's contribution. But go ahead. I'll keep you honest on that.
He was just making phone calls in from the set of 90210. Yeah. I mean, like, here's my 2 cents. Mm-hmm. So we get to meet the punks, the surfers for Christ, the ancients, which is Sonny Bono in his final film role.
Oh.
And the actual party where Andy first sees Gitch.
Who's that?
Oh, that's Gitch.
Gitch?
Ooh. Yeah. I don't know her real name. That's what everybody calls her.
Played by Roxana Zal from River's Edge. And Allie first eyes Nick. So as soon as she sees Nick, she ditches Andy. And also her attempt to help her friend Joan hook up with her brother.
With a lot of cassettes. A lot of cassettes involved too in that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing about those cassettes, and I'm like, they're trying to find the right song, which is like great. But once you find the right song, you're going to have to stop what's currently playing, put in the cassette, and then you're going to have to rewind fast forward to find where it is on the tape.
Yeah.
Which is going to disrupt everybody. Right. Everyone's going to be like, what the hell?
It's a lot of fast forward, like, wait, no, hold on. Almost there. Wait.
Wrong side.
Almost. I almost got it. Sorry, flip. Yeah. Hold on. This is shit. This is an extended play. Hold on. This could take a while to rewind. Hold on.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. We lost most of the audience right there, right?
A lot of people are into tapes. Tapes are coming back. Tape. I don't know why, but people are excited for tapes.
Shh, Grandpa. Why? No, they're not.
People like tapes.
Let's just get him to his ball game, folks. He's really upset. He's all worked up. Put him in front of the TV. Let him watch a ball game. He'll be fine. He loves a good baseball compo.
A fight breaks out because, and not for the last time, because Vals and Lokes don't mix. Mm-hmm. Makes you wonder, whose side are you on, guys?
Oh, Val, 100%. I'm a Val. I'm a Val, guys.
Justin.
Val.
Yep, you're a Val. Mark, you never lived in the Valley, so...
I mean, I think it's... No, but I think it's obvious by my description of what this movie is about. I'm hanging with Sonny Bono.
He's an ancient. He's an ancient.
Yeah. But Mark, it's time for the new Gidget. She's got everything, man.
Wait, hold on.
I've seen it.
I was jealous of that TV, man. Like, you know, back in the day when you had one of those little portable TVs.
Oh, but those are coming back.
Bunny ears.
Oh, yeah.
Ryan, those are coming back.
Really?
Shh, Justin. Let's get Justin to the ball game. We got to get him to the ball game.
I got to get my tapes and my portable television. It's called, now they're currently called phones. The beach party then switches to Reef and Allie's house. And that's where the two siblings have it out.
Mm-hmm. Why were you dancing with that guy?
None of your business.
Bullshit. First of all, he's Nick Rainwood, man. And second of all, he's a fucking Val. And he's the biggest asshole I've ever met in my life.
Wait a second. Who started that fight?
Yeah, who crashed the party and stole my pot?
Oh, and was that the pot you stole from Mom's drawer?
Yeah, what do you know, right? What I'm telling you is, you start pissing around with the valves, don't expect us to wheeze in on it. You know, your low friends bail on you. What are you going to do? Move to the fucking valley? Huh?
Them's fighting words.
There's a lot to unpack with that, and I'm going to start in order of importance. The first one being, again, we talk about the slang in this movie, real or otherwise, but I only know the term wheeze in the context of the weasel himself, Pauly Shore. So, here, it sounds like he's using wheeze to mean, like, get involved, take a side. But do I not understand what wheezing is? I only...
Grandpa, we're going to get you back to the casa. Have you relaxed with some popcorn?
And can I wheeze the juice?
You can wheeze the juice, Grandpa.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, according to that that usage, wheezing the juice would be getting into. You're getting into the juice.
So getting involved.
I think it is the correct usage.
They use wheeze like in other ways too, like meaning it is a derogatory. I can't even remember how exactly it's used, but it's used in a different context also. Justin, help me out. What's wheeze? How is it utilized in this movie?
I don't know. I have to say.
Fair enough.
Fair. No truer words have ever been spoken
on the Scantron test. You were like, I'm not going to just put C. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, none of the above.
I'm just going to fill in no bubbles. I fill in no bubbles.
No bubbles.
So we move on to the next question.
Oh, Grandpa, they don't use Scantrons anymore. Oh my God, he's so cute. When's the ball game start? I'll put it on for him.
Is this volleyball? Oh, he doesn't know what he's watching. It doesn't matter. He's entertained. Okay, the other thing is, obviously, some harsh Valley derogatory talk, which three of us on this podcast live in the Valley currently.
Move to the fucking Valley. You really gotta, when you talk about the Valley, you really gotta enunciate the fuck.
What are you gonna do? Move to the fucking Valley?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah,
like that's what a sin. Though, I will say, when we did move to the Valley, we talked to a lot of people about it and told them where we were moving. They were like, oof, okay.
All those people live here now.
They do.
For a large part.
The other last thing to unpack from that is the fact that Mom has a weed drawer.
Thank you. Again, she's goals.
This is a woman that took off for an entire weekend.
And left
weekend,
her weed. So, you know, she's like, kicking herself.
Of course so she has mad a weed at herself.
She's like, fuck, I'm in Carlsbad without my own weed. Shit, I'm already at Irvine Spectrum. I can't turn back around. I've already hit the spectrum. Ah, I'll just get weed down here. It won't be the same, but it's fine.
It's going to be some shake.
I'll just smoke that
but
Carlsbad
shake. But don't worry, I'll
shake.
Be able to wheeze it. Am I doing it right? I don't know anymore.
Maybe.
It has really shaken the foundation. I thought I knew what wheeze meant, and now I don't know anymore.
Yeah, it wheezed your foundation. I don't think it means a lot of things.
Link and I are cruising the mountain, bro, and we figure wheeze a little juice.
By the way, Tracy Walters shows up as a bum in this movie, and it felt like, right? It shows up late, and it just felt like, yeah, of course, Tracy Walters should just show up at some point in this movie. He was like in every single movie in the 1980s, and please don't fact check that. It's correct.
I think you know I'm not fact-checking it. I think you're safe.
I mean, Dick Miller shows up
exactly.
In this movie. I mean, this movie has an exorbitant amount of characters. There are a lot
it
of
It has all of the
of.
That guys of these eras. We have the that guy of the 70s. We have the that guy of the 80s and the 90s. But isn't it weird that, like, with all the things that Tracy Walters, or Walter, I should say, was in, this is the only New World movie?
Yeah. That is weird.
Yeah, that's
you know,
is
also
weird.
Though what you were saying about Marone, about Brett Marks. Isn't this Tracy Walter and Repo Man just the same character?
I mean, that's Tracy Walter in I think almost all films. Mm. Like that's what they call they don't hire him to be like, well, we need a businessman.
But in this film, he has like, he does like the one-liner, like, you know, like the little, you know, what do you call them? Like the little affirmations and stuff. Like he does in Repo Man. He does them in this movie too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I always thought maybe it was the same.
Very similar.
I thought maybe it was the same guy, the same character.
Is it the same universe?
Well, I mean, it could be. It could be just like with Marone.
This is wheezing my mind. Oh my God, bras. I am wheezing on the juice of time right now. That is wild.
If
bra.
This is, that would be, I mean, forget the Thrashing double feature. Watching this and Repo Man, I mean, you get the full
That's
Tracy Walter
feature.
Experience. That's once he leaves the repo lot. Yeah. He just goes to the beach. He doesn't go far.
Shit.
The same geographic location, too. It's L.A. County.
Yeah.
He may have even just showed up with his wardrobe from Repo Man. I don't know.
And only a four-year difference in the times of the films. Repo Man took place in 84 and this movie in 88. So I'm just saying, something to think about.
Shit. Wow. Wow.
It's going to blow up the message board.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you're right.
It is. The message board's about the shared universe of Under the Boardwalk and Repo Man. They're going to be like, holy shit.
Yeah,
they found us. They found it out. We've been talking about it for years.
God, seriously.
There's going to be, there's a subreddit
right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's already started. Yeah, no one's even heard this yet.
So.
Yeah. It's a righteous story. It's a righteous subreddit.
Yeah.
With titles.
But we've only really gone through half the movie, but the second half of this movie kind of deals with the Compo, or as some squares will call it, the fourth annual Surf Rider competition. And let's just quickly summarize. Nick and Allie get to know each other a little bit more. Nick gets a potential sponsorship. Andy and Gitch bond in jail.
Yeah.
Half girl, half bitch. Gitch.
Yep.
Only an 80s movie could get away with that, don't you think? Like, that's
wait,
like,
they called her a bitch.
I just got away with it on the podcast.
I thought they called her a bitch. Because remember, we were watching it and I was like, what's her name? Gish? No. And our son was like, it's Gitch.
Oh,
he used
hears
the same
it.
Tone Whoa. As fuck the vowels. I was like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that it was Gitch because it was bitch. I thought he said fish.
No, he defines it in the movie, too.
Yeah, he defines says it in the half movie. Half girl, half bitch.
Wow.
You know, if you pay attention to this movie, it really is a lot to offer you.
I am wheezing out right now. I'm wheezing out.
You wheezed out during the initial viewing of this movie.
Did I? I don't know, man. I don't know, bro.
If I understand the word correctly, I think you did. I don't know anymore. As I mentioned, we also get to Dick Miller, and I have a clip of him just because it's amazing. He cannot help but steal any movie that he's in.
Oh, yeah, Anderson. But listen, when we accepted your application, you didn't say anything about...
having tits? Huh?
Well, yeah.
Show me the role right Gitch. Fucking now. Back off.
Ow! Look. I'll talk to the judges, okay?
Well?
You didn't say anything about having balls either.
I mean, how does he do it? How does he do it? It's amazing. He steals anything he's in. Anyway, were you that familiar even? You were more in the 80s New World stuff, right, Justin? So like,
yes, 100%.
Were you aware like he was in so many movies from the 70s New World era?
I didn't know that at the time, no, because I was strictly fascinated with 84 to 88. That was my
not even 83. Spot. Not even 83. You just ignored 83.
Well,
84, the new
84 is when it like transferred over to the new company from Corman.
84 is when they put out Angel, Children of the Corn, and their newer movies start playing.
This journey started for me with Children of the Corn and Angel.
So you never saw Hambone and Hilly? Is that what you're saying? Because you're ignoring 1983? You never saw that one?
No. And I'm going to keep it that way.
All right. Well, okay. Like I said, as I mentioned, the Lokes and the Vowels, they don't get along. So you know what they got to do? They got to fight again. Because now our character from Thrashing and this movie, he got injured. And so they've got a fight. And Nick tries to stop it, being a good guy, but he gets involved anyway. And then Allie catches him punching her brother. So you know what that means. A sad montage where Nick does some night surfing and Allie goes and stares at herself in store windows. My favorite scene? I don't want to like jump ahead, but like, I mean, if you got a montage where two people are walking around feeling things, like, I don't know. I'm 100% on board. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And she spends a copious amount of time just staring in a shop window. They never show us what she's looking at. As far as I can tell, she's just staring at the reflection of her.
That's what I think she's looking at.
But also at this point, these kids collectively, the Vals and the Lokes and the Ancients and everybody, have been up for 48 hours. Nobody has slept at all. No. And there's a compo coming. You can't go into unrested? That all sleepy eyed.
Crazy.
Yeah, his buddies, Nick's buddies show roll up to the compo like the next day, and it's in the morning. They possibly got some sleep for like an hour or so, but they are like, oh, we need some donuts, and they are like feeling the night.
Yeah.
And the ladies that they were with are like passed out in the back of their truck, and they wonder if they're dead. And so like that is the only time where I thought, oh, maybe they got just a little sleep, like an hour or two. But
No, I think they were driving. I mean, if they had to make a run, you know, back to the Val and come back again, is that what you guys call it, the Val?
That's what everybody calls it, bro.
And then head back.
You think you're going to wheeze up to the Val and come right back?
Bruh.
Nah, exactly. Lock in, dog. Exactly.
You're going to be going around the moon and back again, dog. I guess.
We're making up some slang on this episode. You know, why not?
I'm even disappointed that they cut that scene. There's a scene where they're driving in the modified station wagon. Mm-hmm. And they're calling out any woman that's somewhat driving around them. And they're all excited to go to the beach, right? And they're talking about how awesome it's going to be. And then they show the cutaway shot of them getting on the 405. And they cut the whole part out of the movie where for the next hour and a half, they're just sitting in traffic in the 405.
Bumper.
And their enthusiasm has gone from like, yeah, bro, to like, oh, dude, fuck. Do you think it gets better at around the corner? No, probably not. Fuck.
It's coming. The Getty's going to be here in a second. We're gonna roll by the Getty in just a minute, I swear. We roll by the Getty, man. We're probably half an hour away now.
Do we get off at sunset? No. Don't.
It's a trick, brah. It's not faster.
So the fight goes down, and of course, and back at the competition, comes down to our two main characters, Reef and Nick. Of course, they're going neck and neck, and leave it to Reef to really up the stakes before the final wave.
What do you want? I want your balls, bro.
Man, okay.
Wow.
Damn. That is.
I heard Erica say that to somebody once.
Yeah. Yep. Was after a long tit for tat exchange. We were really going at it.
Tit for tat sounds appropriate.
And then we, you know, went out to the water alone. And then we exchanged balls, which was the goal all along.
Yeah.
That would also be called a ball game.
Take Mark on out.
Well, Grandpa.
Is that the ball game you want to go to?
Well, not all ball games are the same.
All right, bras, round up. Let's go. Lock in. It's time for things we're totally wheezed on and things we
wheezed out
your balls on.
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we love and the things we hated about Under the Boardwalk. Mark, what is something you loved?
I already mentioned it, but I loved that like nobody sleeps in this movie, and they have a compo coming. They've got to be exhausted. I was feeling exhausted watching them. I'm thinking, man, I, you know, you're going to go compete. Mm. How are you going to find that energy? There's night surfing. There's early morning surfing. There's sometime at sunrise kind of surfing. There's day surfing. That's all these people do is surf. And surfing is exhausting. You got to get your rest. I sleep every night and I'm exhausted every night. So I can't imagine what they are feeling.
Erica, what did you love?
Oh, I love the mom. I've already said it also. I love the mom character. I'm envious of her. I want to live her life. And she seems really cool. We kind of have the same hair. So loved her. Loved all the little cameos that we already mentioned. Ian Ziering, Dick Miller, others.
Particularly Ian Ziering.
Particularly Ian Ziering. I think what I love most was I didn't grow up in Los Angeles, but this movie is when I lived in the Midwest, what I thought Los Angeles was like. So I'm glad to see that I was right. And that this is an accurate depiction of what I thought it was like out here. Mm-hmm. It is correct. Mm-hmm. I also loved that this movie reminded me that Body Glove existed as a clothing line, or I guess not clothing. They had clothing, but also surf stuff. But I was but I was like, Body Glove was a thing. That's right. People wore clothes called Body Glove. Forgot all about that.
Justin, what did you love?
Well, just like, you know, Kirsch's other film, Tough Turf, the film is just like quintessential late 80s LA, and it's all shot on location. So they really captured all those settings of what it was like along the coast in SoCal in the late 80s, as well as in the valley. So I always loved it for that. The soundtrack's amazing. The surf punks cameo is amazing. All the characters, the punk rockers, the goths that are in certain shots. I just think the film is just a masterpiece of just 80s LA cinema, personally. Mm-hmm. And I've always vowed to live my life like Reef Yorpin as well.
Mm. Which means what exactly to you?
I'm sending the people to the E-Room with dry heaves, even to this day.
Nice.
I agree. I mean, look, I love these kinds of movies, and I do not mean a slight at all when I compare it to Thrashin. I love Thrashin. I love North Shore. It could not have at all been an influence, because that movie comes out when they're shooting this movie. But to have another one of these kinds of movies in the rotation, I'm so happy about that. I love this kind of Romeo and Juliet. I mean, the Romeo and Juliet trope is something that like the 80s was doing all over the place.
Oh yeah.
It's like Karate Kid, basically, you know. It's like all this was like so many different kinds of movies, and it just seemed to fit very well into like the surf or skate scenes. And of course those were blowing up at the time. So movies wanted to kind of take advantage of that. But so I think this is one of those, like, you know, New World gems that nobody knows about simply because it ends up getting kind of buried by the company going under. But to talk about something specifically in the movie, I will say also, and this is a spoiler, so if you haven't seen it and you want to, go ahead and skip the next 30 seconds. But I love that Gitch's dad is a cop in the jail. When that reveal happens,
Is he? Is he a dad or is he a daddy? Because they do not clarify.
What a twist, Mark.
Wow.
I thought, he's a daddy.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay. A guy that she hooked up with.
Mark's crunching something there.
Yeah.
She does later on, once we go back to the present of 2008, she is now a police officer who wears a lot of leather, as it turns out, but, you know, still a police officer. And so I thought maybe that was a tradition that she was carrying on from her dad, or perhaps the influential daddy in her life.
Hmm.
Still dad or daddy, there's an influence.
Is it a dad or daddy, Justin? What do you, as the expert on this movie?
Well, Mark threw me for a loop on that one. I never thought about it till now.
It's amazing you've seen this movie so many times and thought about it for literally decades, and we're throwing you for some loops here.
And Ryan, I saw it in the theater with a live audience twice upon release. Like I said, that pre-screening, and then when it came out, they stuck it on a double feature with Heathers, and they added at the theater near me Skin Deep with John Ritter as the third feature.
Wow.
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 So we had like four.
What?
Wow.
No, so I'm like day. 13 with other 13-year-olds watching friggin' Skin Deep with, I mean, it's hilarious.
Does that mean that Skin Deep is a nearly new world?
It's a reach. It's a reach, man.
But I don't know. They're playing it.
Wouldn't be the first time.
But it played with Heathers and Skin Deep on a triple feature at the Century Albany in San Jose, California in 88.
All right, let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
I hated Gritch's police car.
Gitches?
What the hell is that? Gitches, yeah. What is that? That's not
police car of the future, bro.
I mean, are all cars that well, that also is something that I loved, that in actual 2008, we weren't driving cars that looked like
right.
like modified golf carts. Mm-hmm. So
it's easy for us to look at that years away from 2008 and go, harumph, is that what you thought we'd be driving in the future? But you got to remember this right. is, and this is Back to the Future, which by the way, like the cinematographer for this is Don Burgess, who ends up becoming Robert Zemeckis's go-to cinematographer. And he does leave for a week before they finish shooting this movie. And he does second unit on Back to the Future 2 and Back to the Future 3. So no I have to think that there's a little bit of Back to the Future influence.
I think they had an opportunity to, and this isn't necessarily something that I hated, but they had an opportunity when they showed the surfers in the water and there's pollution and everything. They could have gone a little more in the aftermath with this and make, you know, put the sepia tone on everything and really make it look grimy. But, you know, whatever. It doesn't hurt the movie that it looks the way it does. It looks fine. It's just you could have leaned a little harder into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the future purplish tone is a little – it's a strange choice for, like, future part of the movie.
It's odd.
It doesn't ruin anything, as you said. It is a weird
– no,
just
not
kind
all.
Of like, oh, okay.
Right.
Okay. What are you saying about the future, I guess? You know, plus – I guess the ocean's super polluted then, which I suppose that's what they were thinking in 1988, and they weren't wrong. Erica, what did you hate?
I hate the title. I think Under the Boardwalk is the wrong title. I also hate the song Under the Boardwalk.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't like it.
So it doesn't matter to you that there are two versions of Under the Boardwalk?
It doesn't. On the there could be 10 versions, and I would hate all 10.
Well, the original title of the movie was called Wipeout.
I don't like that either.
Yeah, I don't like the Wipeout song. Ugh. So I'm with Erica on that one too.
Yeah. What would you prefer it to be called?
I don't know. Surf Compo. I think anything, I don't know, the Lokes, like something out, like it's about them. So I think
Erica wanted it to be called Body Glove.
Yes. Actually, that's
great.
Right.
Not wrong.
Yeah.
She would have.
I think, just Under the Boardwalk, I'm not a fan. I also think for them, like to use that song, like the Under the Boardwalk. Is like that's not the vibe of the movie at all.
Sure.
So like when I think about that song, I think about like two old people holding hands and
It appeals to the ancients
of the
beach culture, not the youngs.
Beach culture, that's a good name. Yeah. That's a good title. I mean look, I'm not here to name the movie. I'm just here to judge the name of the movie.
Got it.
You asked me what I hated. That's what I hated.
That's what you hated.
But did it cosmically register?
did not Rob.
Not cosmically, not on a cosmic level, not for Erica. But Justin, for you, what did you hate? Did you hate anything?
The fact that it wasn't long enough. I could use a 3-hour Ulysses cut of this movie if it existed.
Release the Kirsch cut.
What were you hoping that might be included? Is there stuff that you were like you have thought about watching this movie as many times as you have over the years?
Well, it just seems like, you know, how it begins kind of like in a post-nuclear time and kind of ends back in that post-nuclear time. There could have been more to explain what happened with the world before and after it got to the middle section of taking place in 1988. I wish they had had more of a budget to flush out the beginning and end with like the post-nuke world. I thought that was a really cool idea, and it could have used a lot more exposition.
Also just more surf scenes, right? Like, even if it's not them, just more footage of people surfing.
And more surf punks. More surf punk concert footage would have been cool, too.
Yes, more of each of those groups. I think we just kind of got robbed of that.
Because I was ready for a Righteous Story, an even longer Righteous Story with titles.
He calls it 103 minutes, but you wanted... He wanted,
I could use 133 minutes.
I get it. I get it. I wonder if there's anything on the cutting room floor. Yeah, I would... I wonder if there's extra footage. If I hated anything, which I didn't hate much, but it was just the corporate sponsor thing, like that little subplot.
Yeah.
I guess, because here's the thing. I just don't know if it totally works, because I get it. The guy's kind of a douche. He's kind of like a rich guy who's trying to sponsor guys. But, like, he's not doing anything that, like, weird or unusual. Like, he's trying to sign guys up to be sponsors. Like, most people that are into surfing, like Nick is, and as he wonders in the beginning of the movie, they would be dying to get a sponsorship. So I don't feel he's not doing like signing people up and then like using them or manipulating them or doing something. Like, he's just trying to get his clothing brand. That said, also the clothing brand, at times they're trying to play the clothing brand, like, looks awful. Midas like sees Nick wearing a shirt at one point. He's like, what the hell is that shirt you're wearing? And I'm like, I don't know. Is it weird that I'm looking at those clothes and I'm like, it reminds me of lots of clothes that were out at the time. They don't read to me as like, oh my God, those clothes are awful. You know what I mean?
That's because you wanted to be Nick Rainwood, but you did the next best thing and you dressed like him. So
I would love to dress like Nick Rainwood. I would love to. I would absolutely love to.
I mean, I thought everybody who lived in LA and was decent at surfing was offered a surf contract at some point. So I guess I can't relate.
I
would say there's a subtle difference here, though, and that is, if you're hanging out at the beach, if you're a surfer and you're hanging out at the beach and some total rando dude comes over to offer you a modeling contract for his clothing line, buyer beware.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know? For sure. And he is, which is smart, you know. Yeah. And almost, it seems like almost nobody is really taking the bait on that one, so.
Because that movie would have taken a dark turn.
Just imagine the spinoff though was just about that guy and how he didn't sign that contract, and then the downward spiral that his life took as a result. He lost his family, he lost his house, he was
under the boardwalk too.
Under the boardwalk too.
Getting wheezed.
Corporate sponsor gets wheezed. He's like, I'm too old for the business. His wife's like, you're a failure. We're done, Toss.
I tried to sign so many surfers this weekend and none of them.
You're a fucking failure, Federico. Please call me Reef.
He brings in Tracy Walter, and Tracy Walter's wearing the clothes. And they're like, it kind of works. We took some shots of him. The kids are responding.
No, instead of the board, instead of the board from Apocalypse Now, it's the board from Under the Boardwalk.
Apparently, according to the producer, Greg Blackwell, he says they still have that surfboard.
Oh, wow.
No kidding.
Death from Above?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
they still have it. So, pretty cool. All right, let's get to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
It's definitely got to be the party scene where they have the mechanical surfboard, because it's a party that, first of all, you'd never have a building that's that audaciously 80s. Like, it is everything 80s and everything surfing, and then every subgenre of person. It's like you took all the 80s, put it in a blender, and put it on high, and you were like, let's see what we can get out of this. Like, you would never see that in the 80s,
right,
but
right.
I love that they were like, for this scene, we're going to include, it's the most inclusive 80s party ever.
Mm-hmm. With the surf punks as the musical act.
Yes. Yes. Which, and you have like, then they start playing a so slow song, and then two, what I have to presume were figure skaters without their skates coming out to dance for no reason at all.
It was like ballroom dancers. The two ballroom dancers were.
No, but they're wearing like.
Yeah.
They're wearing figure skating
flamenco outfits. Yeah. Yeah. They yeah. And they just keep going with it, even when
flamenco figure skating.
And what about the song dedication? The song dedication. Do they pull it out of the hat? Reef, you're pin? The customer's always right.
Is that song on here too?
Yeah, I just it's
the our day will come, and then and then it goes super fast. It's on there.
Yeah,
our day will come. Yeah, it's on.
Yeah, but that friggin' friend of the sister told them to play the song because she wants that song played for Reef, but they like make fun of him, and I don't know, it's hilarious.
And that party is also being put on by that corporate sponsor. Like, he's put together successful concert. Like, that's the one thing he pulled off really well.
He did everything right. He's going back. He's like a recovering alcoholic. And he's like, I did everything right. He's like holding the bottle. I'm telling you. Under the boardwalk, too.
We got to talk to Fritz. This should happen. I mean, we're ready. We're ready for a legacy sequel.
Writes itself.
To a movie that.
Oh, yeah.
To buy Ian Ziering.
Ian Ziering finally gets in
double
there.
Feature with Skin Deep too.
Time for the legacy sequel on that one too. Erica, your favorite scene?
Oh, my favorite scene without a doubt is the underground parking lot fight. Oh my god, so much use of overhead pipes to avoid being hit by a car, to give some special kicks.
To
stop being hit
inadvertently,
block fire extinguisher. So great. I loved all of that. It was so terrific. That long shot on him, like, the car's coming, it's going to hit me. He could have easily just jumped out of the way at any point, but instead jumps up and grabs that pipe and then just kind of pulls his legs up so the car doesn't hit him. Terrific. Terrific.
Yeah, some good stunt work.
Mm-hmm.
Justin, your favorite scene? Can you pick just one?
Oh yeah, it's easily when the after party at Reef's house after the fight on the beach, and Allie opens the room to her bedroom door, and there's all these people like on her bed, like jumping around, tearing her room apart. She shuts the door and looks at Reef and says, "Great fucking party!" And then all of a sudden the door flies open and all the people pile out of her room, and Reef's like, "Get the fuck out of here, man!" And then like there's like a 3 second beat and like they're long gone. He's all, "Fuck you, man." But the people that leave the room are just like the people that leave the room are like total knobs too.
Total knobs.
Mm-hmm. Total knobs. And like, who's honestly cleaning up after that party?
Andy.
I mean, somebody has to. Like, I know their mom's pretty loose.
Andy's in jail.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Ryan, that's answered in Under the Boardwalk too.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
It
opens with them discussing who cleaned up that party, man.
Dude, there's epic cleanup. Wait till I tell you about the most epic cleanup you've ever heard of a party.
How long is it with titles?
Well, that's a good question. A good way to start our final questions for Under the Boardwalk.
We already did it with who cleaned up the party.
And yet we're going to keep going. Wouldn't making a notch in the side of a surfboard with a knife ruin the surfboard?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, could you do it lightly? I guess you could do it just light enough, but they look pretty deep. So it's going to let water in, which is exactly what you don't want to have happen to a surfboard.
Yep.
Have you seen Mark's YouTube channel about surfboard care?
Surfboard maintenance. Sorry. Surfboard marketance. Oh, no. Okay. Now, do the vowels and lokes not mix because of real inherent differences, be they personal or territorial, or just that they would rarely run into each other due to the topography of Los Angeles?
B. Topography.
Definitely B.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, Andy, as we've talked about, gets, you know, ignored very much by the entire Yorpin family. But is he treated worse than Skeeter, the family dog?
Oh, no, Skeeter. Skeeter's just left outside to follow.
He follows Allie, and she goes, Skeeter, oh, Skeeter. And then Skeeter walks.
Yeah.
Who knows where?
She doesn't take Skeeter
disappears.
Home. She's like, well, gone. Oh, well. And there's stuff tied to him.
Yeah.
He's a mess. Like, yeah. And she's like, oh, well.
Oh, well.
She's a terrible pet owner.
She's surrounded by retail stores where she can stare at her face.
Yeah.
So she gets distracted.
See what I mean? Lokes are assholes. She just let that dog walk away all ruined.
Yep.
Hard to refute.
That shit doesn't fly in the vow. You're going to clean that dog up and you're going to take it home. Because a coyote's going to get it if you don't. So
there's like 15 minutes worth of Skeeter material that's in the director's cut. Justin is going to be thrilled. Why do you think Nick said his idol was Jack Kerouac? Was it the potential for it to be an impressive reference to Allie, or was it the extreme alcoholism?
I think it was because he was trying to get laid and impress her.
Yeah.
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 Because she was the kind of girl that would be into Jack Kerouac.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All like, artists love Jack the girls Kerouac.
Do you think Reef asked girls that question?
Nope.
Yeah.
No.
As soon as she said that she liked creamed corn, he was like, she's a Jack Kerouac kind of gal.
You know what? If this is in the same universe as Repo Man, they're talking about generic foods, which is in the supermarket where Estevez works in the movie.
Yeah.
It shares a lot of similarities. There's a lot of DNA there. All right. Just saying. When the movie is over, does Joan ever work up the nerve to ask Reef out?
Oh, I hope not.
Her character does not... Her character never even tries to ask him out. She just stands there longingly, hoping that he will recognize her and ask her out. So, I mean, there's nothing to make us believe that she suddenly got the courage to ask him. So I'm saying definitely not. She's always going to be that person at the party, sitting alone, going, I shouldn't have come here. I should have just stayed home.
But STD free. Imagine she gets together with Reef. Yeah, she's leaving there with best only herpes. So she's going, man, why won't he look at me? But also she's not leaving with crabs. So.
Yeah,
or the herb. I thought
the jorts and the bumpet were super hot.
I'm just saying, justice for Joan. They kind of let that story drift, you know? But it's in the director's cut. It's got to be. Skeeter and Joan.
When she has crabs.
Skeeter and Joan are a huge part of it.
She leaves the party and goes and rescues Skeeter. Right. Becomes an animal activist. It's great. You're going to love this sequel. The single girl. God.
Ugh, you're right.
Fuck you, Erica.
Let's do some research here. This is from...
Whoa, science research.
Whoa, dude.
Gnarly.
This is from the American Film Institute, referring to the working title Wipeout.
Bro, that sounds important, dog. Let's hear it.
A report in September 1987 from Variety announced that principal photography began on, actually, August 26th, 1987, in Malibu. They also filmed in Hermosa Beach and Seal Beach as well, and the filming completed in September 1987. It was initially reported for release in a March to May section of the LA Times, 1988. Then they started moving it to June of 1988, as reported by a couple of different outlets, including a New World Pictures hiring a New York advertising agency to handle the film's advertising for a anticipated June 17th, 1988 release date. But the national opening was pushed back a year. It does play in Cannes in May of 1988, I imagine, at a competition. And that's probably why it's given a 1988 release date and not 1989, because it does come out April 14th, 1989. There is a sneak preview, as Justin said, They started doing sneak previews around February 1988 before Con. So that is where I imagine you saw it in Oakland.
San Jose, yeah. And I double-checked Shoot to Kill opened in 1988.
Okay, there you go. So that makes sense. And so that's where you got into on the sneak. You got to see it twice. I have to think you're one of the few people on Earth that have seen this movie twice in its original release. Because I totally missed it. Released, though, on New World Video, August 15th, 1989. Now, at this point, it was released in April 1989 in movie theaters. And that's also at Heather's, as you said, Justin, you saw it. That's the last movies that New World releases theatrically. They basically stop that whole business, but they still are putting out videos at the end of 1989. And boy, did they put out some winners along with Under the Boardwalk, which was released for the low, low price of $89.95 on VHS or Beta. Also released, The Hill. It's actually, I think, probably a couple episodes, maybe the first two episodes of Tour of Duty, the TV show produced by New World. But they released it on VHS for only $60. Also released,
bargain.
Terminal Force. Los Angeles is on fire, and no one knows it better than Officer Nick Tyree, played by Richard Harrison. He's seen the smoke signals of the violent crime wave sweeping the city, and the mob's abduction of a star witness's daughter is the last straw. $80. Wow. Directed by Fred Olen Ray, who directed Beverly Hills Vamp, which we covered on this podcast. We'll be covering all these, so these are just little previews. Also, Monte Carlo, which is a New World Television miniseries starring Joan Collins and George Hamilton. Amid the brewing storm of WW2 lies this Mediterranean haven for romance and espionage, a place where dreams and fortunes are made and shattered, and where the roll of the dice can mean the difference between life and death. Mm. $80.
Wow.
I'm kind of looking forward to that one. I'm not gonna lie.
Two tapes, I have to think.
Damn.
I have it on DVD.
Mm.
And then, lastly but not leastly, The Vineyard.
I remember The Vineyard.
Oh, where's my amulet?
Where's my amulet?
A terrifying excursion to an island of death where secrets are buried in the soil. Vines are ripe and evil, and a man obsessed with the forbidden secrets of immortality practices his dark magic.
$80.
$80. Yeah. Unbelievable.
It's a wonder that they went under.
Crazy. What were they going up against in August 1989 against other releases? Why, just the anniversary edition of The Wizard of Oz.
That's a tough retail one on that?
$25. Beaches.
Oh, Beaches is a good one. That's a saddie.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. Rain Man. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Beneath my wings. Beaches. That one really wheezed me. Beaches really wheezed me.
That wheezed you out there. Lots of good stuff happening around that time. And that is it. That is Under the Boardwalk. Justin.
$80.
Justin. $80. $80.
Under the Boardwalk, $80.
$80.
I mean, doesn't that price sound a little bit like New World going, oh man. I mean, Under the Boardwalk's $90.
You know what, though, so, Ryan? If I told you they were putting out a director's cut 4K of Under the Boardwalk, $80, you'd be like, sign me up.
It's true. It's true. I feel seen. Justin, thank you for joining us on this episode. You are the Under the Boardwalk super fan. Last thoughts about Under the Boardwalk.
One of the best movies ever made.
What is it? Where is it on your ranking of New World movies?
Ooh.
Top five.
Dang, top five. That's a good call. Top five.
Is it?
What would be another one that's in that top five?
The other ones I've been on this podcast for.
Dead Heat.
Dead Heat.
Hellraiser. Dead Heat.
Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tough Turf.
Mm-hmm.
You do love Tough Turf.
And The Punisher.
Punisher.
Yeah. Those are that's a real menagerie of movies right there.
That is a slice of New World history, that's for sure. Thank you, Justin, for being on this episode, and thank you guys for listening. If you want to hear more of our episodes of Ha Ha August 2 Double Take, you can go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where you'll find everything New World Pictures Podcast related. Until then, we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
$80.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description.
I have to raw dog the internet.
Woo!